Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. We are lucky to have a fascinating guest in the studio with us, and someone who's a very good friend. Former Times Union editor Harry Rosenfeld is here. He has a new memoir out entitled Battling Editor, The Albany Years. In 1978, Harry Rosenfeld left the Washington Post, where he oversaw the paper's standard-setting coverage of Watergate. And he did so to take charge of two daily papers under co-ownership in Albany, The Morning Times Union and The Evening Knickerbocker News. It was a challenging moment in the newspaper industry. While new technologies were reducing labor costs on the production side and providing ever more sophisticated tools for journalists to practice their craft, those very same technologies would soon turn a comparatively short-lived boom into a grave threat as ever more digitally distracted readers turned to sources other than print and other legacy media for their news. The memoir is a follow-up to Rosenfeld's previous memoir, From Kristallnacht to Watergate. Harry Rosenfeld, you will remember, was the character Harry Rosenfeld, who appeared in both the book and the film versions of All the President's Men. Now you can read his book, Battling Editor, The Albany Years, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Harry Rosenfeld back to the Roundtable. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, Joe.
It was so nice to see you, and congratulations on the book. I had just a blast reading about this. I think my last question to you the last time I had you on, when we were talking about the previous memoir, was, will you write about Albany? And you said, I think I have to.
Well, and it followed quickly thereafter. Once I finished touring for the Kristallnacht book, which took a while, I began seriously to work on the memoir, although I actually found in my computer records that I began to work on it before the Kristallnacht book was actually published.
So you were already thinking about what you were going through at the Albany papers.
Well, I was putting down notes, you know, ideas.
So tell us how you came to Albany. What was it that brought you to Albany to take over these papers, the Times Union and the former Knickerbocker News?
I had worked for 12 years at the Washington Post, and before that, 12 years and more at the New York Herald Tribune. And I had very important jobs there, but they were all at the level of department heads, assistant managing editor, foreign editor, things like that. And I had reached a stage in my life where I had determined that I was ready for bigger responsibilities in the newspaper world, even before Watergate, but certainly after Watergate was such a successful venture. I knew that I had the capacity to aspire to higher positions.
In that aspiration to higher positions, and this is by no means no slight to the city of Albany in any way, shape, or form, but I assume there were other offers at bigger papers throughout the country that you could have taken.
Well, there were some, but none that matured, and this was a good opportunity for me. And Roger Greer, who was the publisher, sought me out, and I liked what he had in mind, which was to upgrade the papers.
Yep.
And I took a look at the papers, and while I didn't think of Albany as my dream world at that time, I saw this. There was a job of work to be done here, and I was confident that by this time I had the ability to do it. I was equipped to do it.
The name of the book is Battling Editor. What were you battling when you came in?
Well, not only I, but every editor battles.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, that's part of the job, right?
Yeah, exactly. Because we were trying to evolve the paper from one level of performance to a higher level, that was a battle in order to inculcate new standards, in order to convince the staff to come along with you, and to take all those steps and measures that would make that possible. And there wasn't a handbook for that you could consult and say, step one is this and step two is that. At least none that I was aware of. So I had to do it by using my common sense and relying on my experience, both in New York and in Washington. And I know I've worked at those are classy papers, so I knew what the goal was. And that was one battle. The battle was then to, as every editor worth his or her salt knows, that they get the news into the paper is an endless battle because, and factually, in this day of fake news and whatnot, we actually work to get it right, even though we missed the point. The effort is to get it right. And that is a battle, especially if you get to very serious stories where the people you're writing about have no intention of sharing the truth with you whatsoever. So this becomes a battle. It becomes a battle to maintain your integrity and editorial standards and quality. It becomes a battle over budgets, even under the best of circumstances. It's a normal tug of war, and you have to battle for your resources, for staff and for newsprint space, and you have to battle readers who don't want you to deliver the bad news, and readers who do want you to deliver the good news. There's always a tension there. I think a newspaper editor's life is a battle, is a series of battles.
So you write about this in the book, but let me ask it as a question, which is, how do you think you were received initially in the Albany market?
Well, I was received very well by the community. At least they said so. They greeted me effusively. There were welcoming occasions. The mayor and judges and whatnot, and also I made a lot of local appearances at libraries, at special groups. I spoke at luncheons. I had every indication that that the public supported me. And as we began to improve and write about the main issues confronting these communities which we covered, we got more attention and more support because I think people recognized that this was something that was valuable for them. As for the staff, they were, I think, hesitant. They were a little bit afraid. Totally understandable. What will the new guy do, and what heads will fall, and so forth and so on. And there was that antagonism that had to be overcome.
Was when you came in, what was the it was a Hearst paper then, correct?
Then and now.
And did that give you what was your knowledge of that as an operation going in?
Well, if you had asked me a dozen years earlier, if someone had come from Hearst, I would not have been interested. But before I came, there was a vast change in Hearst that had been reported on, which was that a new regime had taken over by John Miller and Frank Bennick, and they were reshaping the Hearst newspapers in particular. That's what interested me. And so by the time the offer came from Roger Greer, already an old boss of mine, Jim Bellows, was already working for Hearst in Los Angeles. And there were other good editors that had been hired. And the mission laid out for me by Roger Greer was explicit. Make these papers first class. And Roger also shared his view that there were a lot of uncovered stories that needed attention. So everything was laid out for me. The context was good. I had no equivocation about joining Hearst.
A couple of things. Harry Rosenfeld is our guest. His new book is Battling Editor, The Albany Years. He is going to be at the Albany Institute of History and Art talking about and signing his book at 2 o'clock December 8th. And then on the 17th, you will be a part of a really cool event called A Truth-Telling Journey from Newsprint to Bound Pages with William Kennedy, Harry Rosenfeld, and Paul Grondahl. And that is on Monday, December 17th at 5:30 at the Hertz Media Center, which is located in the Times Union Building in Colony. So the Knickerbocker news, when that goes, that's tough, right? That's a tough.
It's always tough.
That's a tough decision.
That was a struggle from the day that I walked in the door, nearly. Very early on, even Roger, who's a very supportive publisher, said to me, why don't we absorb this Saturday Nick into the Sunday Times Union? And, you know, I fought that and successfully, and it didn't happen. But that was spinning around in his head. And then when Joe Lyons became publisher, the push was renewed, and I always opposed it because my mother didn't raise me to close newspapers.
Right.
And I already had been part of the closing of the Herald Tribune. And I wasn't, you know, it wasn't on my agenda to find another newspaper to close.
And just for a second, let's talk about the sense that it made at the time to have a morning and an evening paper, of why that was important, especially for this market, this city.
Evening newspapers flourished in America when the American economy was vastly different, when we were a highly industrialized economy with a lot of manufacturing jobs, where people went off very early to their jobs and came home in the afternoon and after work had the chance to relax by reading an afternoon newspaper. That began to be undermined not so much by radio as by TV. When TV began to broadcast at 6 o'clock,
right,
and that was a mainstay of the network TV broadcast, then that began to chip into the market for the afternoon paper. And increasingly, as the economy shifted to a 9-to-5 economy, the relevance of an afternoon newspaper diminished. And it was just relentless because, although I kept on saying no, 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 the circulation figures showed that as much as the Morning Times Union gained, often the Knickerbocker News lost. So finally, I was convinced that this was a losing game and we best go on to a new world.
So when the last book came out, I went to, I think, two of your events, and it struck me because there were people, I think, at both during the Q&As who said the same thing, which I assume is a question that you get, and correct me if I'm wrong in this, that you get wherever you go, a question or a comment where people say, well, but you know, I still miss the Knickerbocker News.
Oh, sure. I mean, and I respect that. I still miss the Herald Tribune.
Yeah.
And that's great. I mean, that is one of the things that newspapers have going for them, that they, if they're good or good enough, they integrate themselves into the very bones of their readers. And not because they're perfect, far from it, but because they're essential and in their in the lives of readers. And that's a marvelous thing to have. Now, you have to have readers, you have to have advertisers. That's the way the business works. And if you don't have those, then the business doesn't work.
You headed the newsroom at the Times Union from 1978 to 1994. You still remain as editor at large. You're still on the editorial board.
Right.
That's still important for you. You still enjoy that.
Oh, I enjoy it very much. It gives me focus. And until I began to write my memoir, my first memoir, I also wrote my weekly column. So that involved me very much during my retirement work with the Times Union. Since then, since working on my memoirs, That's occupied me, and I haven't been able to write the columns. And but the my work on the editorial board is very important to me. I don't know how important it is to the editorial board, but I am energized by it. The board is comprised of people who are very smart and very true blue, and it's good to be in their company.
The William Kennedy writes the foreword of this book, says, Harry's book is often about tough decisions, and it stands out as a handbook on how to live an ethical life in the news business right now. How hard do you think it is to live an ethical life in the news business right
Very
now?
Very hard. It's a strain. It's a stress. It's constant. The pressures are enormous, and that's even in the best of circumstances.
Yeah.
And you just have to develop a very strong backbone, and to keep on fighting. Even when you lose, you have to keep on fighting.
Have you ever seen, in all of your years in journalism, have you ever seen a time like this where, I mean, not only are the financial crises that is so many newspapers are facing, but in addition to that, you have just journalism itself being questioned, and the president referring to it as enemy of the people. I mean, did you ever think you would see such a thing?
Not in America, I didn't. I thought, I mean, the free press is such a keystone of American freedom and liberties that the First Amendment was put in by the founders for this precise reason, to be a monitor of the government and to speak truth to power. And I have never seen the virulence of the attack we are seeing today. And it mirrors the experiences of my childhood, I have to say. I understand these experiences now as I did not as a child. But Hitler attacked the press as the enemy of the people and as the lying press, literally in those words, in order to build his bridge, because he full understood that if he were to take over, he needed to silence the people that would call him out. And he succeeded. And I think Trump is trying to do the very same thing. People who oppose him, because they oppose him, have to be silenced.
So this is what I have trouble understanding in this equation, which is, when we were told this, and I'm curious as to what you make of this, which is, we're told that if there's anything that people hate more than politicians is the press. So how do we as journalists then make our case for the importance of our work when faced with not only a president who is referring to what we do as being an enemy of the people and fake news, ... but also that people do not have respect for the institution?
Well, the only thing we can do is to do our work well. We can't go around patting ourselves on the back and saying, we are doing good work. We have to do good work. What other argument can prevail? I don't understand. We have to be careful in our work. We have to be responsible. And I think things that have complicated this equation and that have engendered this antagonism is not only the pencil press, it is the cable news, mm-hmm. It is the internet and all the things that come out of it. And it is all lumped together with the press, the free press, whether fairly or unfairly, and that is part of the problem. How do we get out of it? By doing very good work and being seen to be done. I don't know. Who can we call on? Politicians will respond to the public's point of view. So if you're right and there is this overwhelming negative view of the
press. Well, we see it in the polls, but yet you still see people who support their local newspapers, who support, who want to read.
Well,
what
the Times is doing rather well.
Yes.
I mean, what I know is the Times said that they are now at 4 million circulation. 1 million of it is in print. 3 million of it is on the web. Well, that's a level that they've never seen. So this paper is under attack from the president every day.
Every day.
All right. The Washington Post, I hope they're doing very well.
Yeah.
They're under attack every day. The smaller papers, the regional papers, are suffering from more from the disappearance of advertisers and readers than the larger presses. I think that question is more pertinent to that. And what you have to do is to convince your community by your performance that you're a reliable and necessary thing in their lives.
Are you still, I mentioned, you know, you go to the editorial board meetings, you certainly have a hand, you show up to work at the newspaper. Do you still worry about circulation? Do you want to know those numbers? Do you want to know what's going on?
I want to know that the circulation is going up. When it's going down, I don't want to know about it.
Well, I'm with you on that one. Sure, you want to know that more people are reading right than less.
Well, and I understand that not everybody wants to hold a newspaper in their hands to read. So I have come to understand the power of the internet. So I want the internet to be respond to the same high standards that the printed press.
You said a moment ago about, you know, that so it's the duty of these papers now to do good work. I would think you would certainly you look at the role that the Times Union has in this region and still doing good work, right? I mean,
exactly.
You've come into the capital city when you took this over as your battling editor years and years and years ago. It was you were looking at the state. You were looking at state corruption. You were looking at what was happening in the halls of the Capitol, and in the region. And none of that really has changed.
That's right. And just think about when you look at the exposés that the Times Union has printed in the last year or so, or ever many years. They involve all communities: Troy, Cohoes,
sure.
Albany. Because the battleground is not just Washington. The battleground is our own community, our own town, our own cities, our own counties, our own state. Those are all battlegrounds. And we're all owed faithful service at all these levels, not just at the presidency.
You're still, if the Times Union breaks a huge story, I assume you're still... You're loving that.
Yes, it's the joy of my life.
Yeah, it doesn't get better than that,
no.
Does it? Yeah,
no. You're quite right.
And so you'll be out, you'll be talking to people, and that's a fun exercise. I assume people like talking to you and of course, want to know about Watergate, but want to know about this as well.
Well, I have, from my experiences the first time around, my wife experienced in... wonderful experiences throughout this country, and heard the stories of the various peoples, because people responded to my book at different points of the there, some to my childhood, some to my army service, some to my work here or there, and that all triggered different memories and of their experiences that were analogous to that, and then we heard their stories. And that enriched us so much. But it also showed us the warmth with which we were being received by these people. And I've had that experience. Well, I was at the bookhouse and to open up this venture. And again, we had that feeling of warmth and the good questions and intelligent questions and not powder puffs and not, you know. And I like that.
Well, you are going to, the name of the new book is Battling Editor, The Albany Years. It is published by Excelsior Editions. It is, it's so much fun to read and is so important for anyone who is interested in the news business and your amazing career. You will be at the Albany Institute of History and Art on December 8th at 2 p.m. for a talk and a signing. And then there's the event on Monday the 17th with you, Bill Kennedy, and Paul Grondahl, which ought to be quite an event as well.
It should be fun.
Excellent. Harry Rosenfeld, a great pleasure, as always, to speak with you. Thank you very much.
I thank you very much.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.